Nedarim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Dalet, 2-4. Now, up to now, we've said this principle that governs so much of Nedarim, which is you have to mean what you say, Piv V'libo Shavin, but you don't have to really say exactly what you mean. We saw the principles of Kinuyim and Yadus, that if you say a word which can be understood to be referring to Korbanos, or if you, Yadus, if you say an incomplete thought, which is therefore it's inexplicit what you're trying to do, we assume again the general principle of Stam Nedarim Lahachmir, that you, what you're trying to achieve should be effected and effective, and therefore your nether is going to be binding. So here our Mishnah is going to talk about a new point, and here we'll actually say that the principle explicitly of Stam Nedarim Lahachmir, which are the first words of our Mishnah, which means an inexplicit neder or generic neder is interpreted to be lahachmer, strictly, meaning to be effective. But here, the Mishnah is actually adding a new principle, which is if we're talking about something which is actually ambiguous. When I say ambiguous, I mean it now in the literal sense, the same way ambidextrous means you can use two hands equally, and ambivalent means you're pulled in two different emotional directions. So when I say ambiguous here, I mean your sentence that you said, your neder that you made, could be interpreted in two separate ways. And the point of our Mishnah is going to be, and we'll have a number of examples, where there are two ways to interpret what you said. One way would be an effective neder, and one way would be an ineffective neder. So then the rule is Stam Nedarim Lahachmir. Unless we have further explanation about what you meant, we will assume, we'll interpret the meaning of your ambiguous neder to be one which is binding and one will be bound. And the way the Bartanura learns, like Tosi Yom Tov, is that this isn't a suffix. It's not just a suffix derais lachumra. We don't know what you meant, so we'll assume the worst because it's the derais issue of these mitzvahs of Nedarim. But rather, it's actually like a din vadai. The rule is, not because of a doubt, but just the rule is that an ambiguous neder is interpreted and binding lachumra. Unless we have something else to change that, to mitigate that. And that being the case, if one would make a ambiguous neder, he would be held accountable even to lashes if he went and violated it. Okay, so our Mishnah will have a series of different potentially ambiguous nedarim to illustrate, and each one will say the same principle. So the pattern is like here we have from the first one, which looks like this. Stam nedarim lahachmir, ambiguous nedarim we interpret stringently, meaning they're effective. Uferushim lahakel, and we accept an explanation of what the person who was making the neder meant, lahakel, even leniently, even if what he's saying seems rather far-fetched. Ketzad. So, for example, Amar harei alai kavasar maliach keyei nesach. If a person says this thing, we'll call it tofu. A person says, tofu is forbidden to me, kabasar maliach, like salted meat, or ye nesach, or wine that was offered as a libation. So now, there's two possibilities. This sacrificial material could be offered to Hashem, in which case it's a davar hanoder, kind of thing which becomes consecrated by a declaration, and therefore it would be effective for a neder, or it could be something which was offered to an idol, to a avodah zarah, in which case it's certainly still forbidden. The things that are offered to idols is forbidden, but that's a davara isur. It's forbidden by dint of the Torah, not by someone saying it's forbidden. The same way we said that if a person says something's forbidden to me, like pork or like blood or like chalev, it's not effective. So too, if it's sacrificial materials offered to idols, again, such an neder would be ineffective. So this person said, "Harei alai kavasar maliach kiyei nesach." This tofu is forbidden to me, like sacrificial meat or sacrificial wine. Imshel Shamayim Nadar, if he said it's a sacrificial material that was offered to Hashem, Shamayim, then Asur, then he's bound, meaning that the neder is effective and he couldn't eat that tofu. Imshel Avodah Zarah Nadar, however, if his intention when he said it was he's restricting it as an offering given to an idol is forbidden to him, so then Mutar, the tofu, remains permitted to him because that's not an effective neder. Ve'im stam, if he was inexplicit, it was ambiguous. He didn't say whether he was talking about sacrificial meat or sacrificial wine to Hashem or to idols. He said nothing of the sort. Then asur, then the tofu is forbidden to him because of this principle of stam nadarim lahachmir. We treat it stringently, and we assume he meant an offering to Hashem. Now, that's the first example, and we follow the same pattern several times. So the next one is, harei like kacherem. If a person says, this tofu is forbidden to me, like cherem. Now, cherem can be one of two things. Cherem can mean something that's forbidden and given over to the Beis HaMikdash, as berek abayis, or it can be cherem given to the kohanim, as soon as the kohen receives it, so it becomes his personal private property, no longer invested with any kedusha, any consecration, any restrictions beyond the fact that this is private property. Of course, your pen and your car is forbidden to me because they're yours. And if I would drive your car right with your pen, I'd be a ganav, I'd be doing something forbidden. But it's not something that's a davar hanoda that became forbidden by me saying so, just because the Torah said you can't steal stuff. So cherem teshamayim would be something which is a davar hanoder. It's berek abayis, it's based on Bignish property, and it's one is forbidden to make use of it. If one would use the Beis HaMikdash's car or the Beis HaMikdash's pen, so then he'd be over the iser of me'ilah, of misappropriating consecrated material, and that's the davar hanoder. And so being matfis, connecting the tofu, for example, to cherem shamayim berek abayis, the Beis HaMikdash's car pen, would be yes effective. Whereas if it's cherem kohanim, it would not be effective. Therefore, the Mishnah says, "Harei lai kacherem." A person says, "This tofu is like cherem to me," meaning forbidden like cherem to me. But he's not explicit if he means necessarily cherem shemayim or cherem kohanim. And therefore, im kacherem shel shemayim, if he says that it was talking about cherem shel shemayim, the Beis HaMikdash is cherem berek abayis, that's a davar hanoder, and therefore asur. The vow is binding, and he can't eat tofu. V'im kecherem shel kohanim. But if he explains he intended it to be like the forbidden stuff which is given to kohanim, since that's not a davar hanoder, once the kohanim get it, mutar, the vow, the neder, is not binding, and he can eat the tofu. V'im stam, and if he doesn't explain what he meant, he just says it's like cherem, then asur, again, it's forbidden because of the principle of stam nadarim lahachmir. Okay, the next case. If he says, harei alai kamaiser, he says, this tofu is like maiser to me, meaning he's forbidding it to himself like maiser. Again, maiser could mean maiser as in maiser behema. Maiser behema is one of the eight categories of zvachim, of animal sacrifices. And it is davar hanoder. Bottom line, I'll come back to that in a moment. Or maiser could refer to agricultural maiser, like maiser rishon that goes to the levi, etc. In which case, it's not... It could be a davar mutter, according to halacha. We paskin that maaser rishon is actually permitted to be eaten by a non-levi, but even according to Rav Meir holds it's aser. So it's a davar aser, but it's not a davar hanoder, and therefore would not be effective if he meant like maaser, agricultural maaser. So the Mishnah says, harei alai maaser. He says, this tofu is forbidden to me like maaser. Im kamaaser behema nadar. If what he means, he says, is like a maaser behema, the tithe of animals, so then asur, the tofu is forbidden to him, because Maaser Behema has a status of davar hanoder. I'll explain more in a moment again. Vim shel goren, but if he says what I meant was agricultural maaseris, goren means the threshing floor, so that would be the maaser given to the levi, perhaps, as maaser rishon, then mutter, then the tofu is not forbidden to him, it's permitted to him, because not a binding neder. Vim stam, and if he doesn't say what kind of maaser he meant, asur, again, it's binding because of the principle, once again, of stam nadarim lahachmir. Now, just on the point of maaser behema, so just take a step back. What is maaser behema? I want to discuss for a moment. Maaser behema is the rule that in every year of, defined by the mission in Rosh Hashanah over there, one's livestock, he has to tithe it. What he does, he takes all the sheep or the cows, the goats, he puts them in a corral and then lets them out one at a time. And as the 10th one and the 20th one, 30th one pass through the corral opening, he daubs it with red paint and that becomes consecrated as Maaser Rishon. He says, Harei Zu Maaser. He calls it Maaser Rishon. Maaser Behema. And then that animal is brought as an offering. Now, the fact that he says, Harei Zu Maaser would tell you that he's Devar Hanoder. He's just declaring it. But the truth is, technically speaking, the animal becomes consecrated as a Maaser Behema when it walks through the gate, even if one didn't say the words, Harei Zu Maaser. That raises some questions about how this is a Davar HaNoder. it happens if that one's saying, but still the bottom line is, the Mefarshim explain, that since he's facilitating this whole setup and he's making them come to the corral one at a time, so he's essentially making the 10th one into Meiser. When they went in, they weren't, none of them were Meiser. When the 10th one comes out after he sets it up like that, so it becomes Meiser. And that being the case, it's equivalent to Davar HaNoder, and therefore it's effective to be Matvis to Meiser Behema. Good. Now, the last of the series like this, Harelai Ketruma. A person says, this tofu is like truma to me, meaning he wants to forbid it. Now, truma, again, can come in two basic varieties. We could have agricultural truma, the gift to the Kohen, truma gadola or trumas meiser, etc. Or it could be trumas halishka, the donations that were given to the base Hamikdash and kept in a certain chamber there, recall back Maseches Shkalim, if you will. So these, like think the Machsa Shekel, these are coins that are given to the base Hamikdash as a gift. And of course, it's consecrated by virtue of one declaring it to be such, that's Davar HaNoder. So Truma could be one of the two things, and therefore, again, the Mishnah says, Im Ketrumas Halishka Nadar, if he says what I meant was the donations given to be kept in the chamber there as part of, like, Machsa Shekel, donations to the Beis HaMikdash, and it's consecrated, that's a Davar HaNoder, and therefore Asur, the tofu becomes forbidden, because the nether is effective. Vim Shel Goren, but if he meant agricultural Truma, again, threshing floor, literally translated, like Truma given to the Kohen, well, it's mutter. Again, truma gadola and trumas meiser, okay, whatever, truma gadola is certainly a davar asur, like pork, etc., and blood, but it's not a davar noder, and therefore the vow is ineffective. Vim stam, if he didn't say what kind of truma he meant, then asur, then the nether is binding, and the tofu is forbidden, consistent with the same principle we said all along about stam the darm lahachmir, and that's divir reb meir. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is going to disagree. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is going to disagree on this last point. Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the basic principle that stam nadarim lahachmir, that we treat them strictly. However, he says, stam truma be Yehuda asura. If we're talking about truma and you don't say what kind of truma you meant, you're talking about a netter that was taken in the area of Yehuda in Judea, the southern part of Israel near the Beis HaMikdash, where people would give money to the Beis HaMikdash as truma salishka, or as Truma Segorin giving it to the Kohanim as Truma Gadol, etc. So then we'll assume Lahachmir, and we assume he meant Truma Zalishka, and therefore it's effective. But Begalil Muteris, if we're talking about a neder, a vow that was taken in the northern part of Israel, in the Galilee, so then we'd say there's no ambiguity. She'ein anshe Galil Makirnes Truma Zalishka. As my kids would say, it's not a thing. In the northern part of Israel, people ain't Makirin, as truma, they don't pay attention, they're not mindful of, they don't do that. No one ever, if you'd ask, in the other case of the Mishnah, you could take a survey, did you mean, you know, when, like, let's say the first example about the libation, did you mean a libation to Hashem or a libation to Avodah Zarah? So probably 99 out of 100 people would say, I meant to Hashem, of course, but there's an ambiguity, maybe Avodah Zarah, and so on. Here what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is, listen, if you interview 100 people about what they meant by this, when they said truma in the Galil, 100 out of 100 would say, I meant truma to the Kohanim. Who talks about truma salishka over here in the Galil? We don't talk like that. We don't say that kind of stuff. And that being the case, Rabbi Yehuda holds that while it's true that if there's an ambiguity, we go lechumra and are strict, in a scenario where there's effectively no ambiguity, even though the dictionary could allow for truma refer to truma salishka, but no one talks the way over here in this locale, therefore Rabbi Yehuda says no ambiguity, and therefore we'd go, in this case, lekula in the north, in the Galil, because they obviously didn't mean that. Okay, so the halacha will be like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the next line of the Mishnah is very, very misleading. It's structured exactly the same way as the previous sentence of Rabbi Yehuda, and it sounds like it's a continuation of what he's saying, because it says the same way. Look, I'll read them both together so you see how they look like they are exactly one and the same pattern. Again, we say, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Stam Truma Bi Yehuda Asura. Rabbi Yehuda holds that Stam Truma and Yehuda is Asur, it's binding. Begalil Muteris, it's not binding in the Galil. She'ein Anshe Galil Makirnes Truma Salishka. They don't talk of that in Galil. Then it says Stam Charamin Be Yehuda Mutarim. It says that if you make a Stam Cherem declaration, meaning the tofu is like Cherem to me, without saying what kind of Cherem, to Shemaim or to the Kohanim, Be Yehuda Mutarim, in Yehuda it's permitted, uvagalil Asur, and in the north it's prohibited. Because people of north, again, don't recognize, they don't talk about giving cherem to Kohanim. So it sounds like it's the same kind of thing again. But the truth is, it's totally not the same thing at all. As the Gemara explains, if you think it through for a second, we're saying Stam Charam B'Yehuda are Mutarim. Now, when you're in Yehuda by the base of Mikdash, you have a base of Mikdash nearby, and therefore Charam to the Mikdash is reasonable. And you have Kohanim nearby, because the Kohanim lived in the south near the base of Mikdash, not really in the north. That being the case, it's ambiguous. Did he mean Charam to Mikdash or Charam to Kohanim? And we said that before in the Mishnah, it said, we of course go strictly, but here the Mishnah says B'Yehuda Mutarim. We go Lakula. So what's going on here? So the Gemara says, even though the Mishnah didn't say so, we have another Shita, a third Tana. In addition to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir we mentioned up to now, we have another Tana, whose name is Rabbi Eliezer Bar Tzadok, and he rejects the entire principle of our Mishnah that Stam Nedarim L'Hachmir. He says they go L'Hakil to L'Kula, leniently. And therefore, in the south, where there's a base of Mikdash and Kohanim, if a person says cherem without being explicit what kind of cherem, we'll assume that he meant lakula, he meant the Kohanim, and therefore he won't be bound by his neder. Okay, so it's the exact opposite. It's just that, up north in the Galil, their base here, no Kohanim living there, the Kohanim lived down south by the base of Mikdash because that's where they worked, etc. And that being the case, if a person said cherem, he would never mean to Kohanim. Therefore, there's no ambiguity at all, kind of like the previous case of Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, they must have meant cherem to the Mikdash, to Shamayim, and that being the case, it would, yes, be a binding nether up north. So, again, the words of the Mishnah say, Stam cheramim b'Yehuda. If a person says something is forbidden like cherem in the Yehuda in the south, since it's ambiguous, he says, mutarin lakula, he goes leniently, uvagalil asurin. But in the north, it actually would still be binding, and he would... One who said it's like cherem in the north would be bound. Why? She'en anshe galil makir nes charmei kohanim. No one ever talks about the cherem to kohanim of north. Therefore, there's no ambiguity. It must mean cherem shamayim. So, that's the shita that you go stam nedarim lakula. The lacha, like I said, is Rabbi Yehuda. So we ask you paskin like the Mishnah that stam nedarim lachumra. But, as Rabbi Yehuda illustrated, in a scenario where there is no ambiguity because no one talks that way, we wouldn't get out our shoehorn and force a totally implausible interpretation, even though the words could perhaps mean that. If it's clear that no one did mean that, then we won't say it, and we won't make the vow be binding.